It's a fairly common idea that Fatima belongs to yesteryear, something to look back on, but something belonging to a bygone period. Well, don't believe that. Fatima's day has not yet come. Fatima happened in 1917, but it spans across the century, with a climax yet to come, the decisive struggle between the forces of good and the forces of evil, a world chastisement and a world cleaning. And this crisis need not happen. All is conditional. It all hinges on whether sufficient numbers of people do what Our Lady of Fatima requested. Lucy, who spoke to Our Lady, has said that Our Lady told her that the devil has begun a decisive battle. And a former high priest of Satan declared in 1972 that the organization of Satanism is global and that its converts are coming in fast. On the other hand, Catholics and other Christians are apostatizing at an alarming rate. Well, we can't go through the various private prophecies, but we mention that the writings of St. Louis de Montfort give prophetic notice of Antichrist. And we recall that Pope Leo XIII, while celebrating Mass one day, had a vision wherein he was shown that the devil will be unchained and let loose during the second half of the 20th century, Pope Leo XIII. Also, it's recorded that the venerable Anna Catherine Emmerich, a stigmatic who died in 1924, said, 50 or 60 years before the year 2000, Satan will be unchained for a time. And to mention just one more, Teresa Newman, stigmatic, mystic, visionary, speaking after the second half of this century had begun, said, a terrible chastisement is now ready to fall upon the earth, and it will exceed anything known before. Well, we may shrug off the Newmans, the Emmerichs, the Montforts, and the Popes. Their words strike a chord with the words of the Queen of Prophets at Fatima. And one thing that she enlightened us on is war. Wars are not accidents of politics or history. Wars are God's punishment for sin. In 1916, Europe, the mighty continent of Christian or of once Christian nations, was shuddering under the awful war wounds which would bleed it white and helpless during the next three decades. And it was in 1916, as the war raged, that Fatima began with a preparation. The angel of Portugal, St. Michael himself, appeared to three small children at Fatima, a remote village in Portugal, to prepare them for Our Lady's apparitions which should take place the following year. And he carried in his hands a host and a chalice, and from the host, blood was flowing into the chalice. He left host and chalice suspended in midair, and he prostrated himself to teach the children his prayer of preparation. And when he'd completed his prayer, he rose and he administered miraculous communion to the three children. The following year, 1917, Our Lady herself came to the children at the Cova da Iria near Fatima. She came at the precise moment when the master conspirators had sent their agents, Lenin and Trotsky, into Russia to seize the reins of the Russian Revolution and to make Russia a beachhead, a territorial base for the worldwide war against God. Our Lady spoke to three small Portuguese children, but her message was for the world. The world must repent, or it must face a train of calamities beginning from that moment when Russia was falling into the hands of the real enemy and reaching into the years ahead to a climax, annihilation of some nations yet to happen. The first visitation was on May the 13th, and Our Lady told the children that she would come again on the 13th day of each month. Each month, more and more people followed the children to the cova. During the July visitation, for one awful moment, she showed the children a vision of damned and devils in a sea of fire, a sight so shocking, Lucy later said that they might have died of terror had they not been already promised heaven. And this vision underlined Our Lady's next words. You have just seen hell, she said. To save souls from hell, the Lord wishes to establish in the world the devotion to my Immaculate Heart. If people do what I shall tell you, many souls will be saved, and there will be peace. Save souls. That is the key of Fatima, saving souls. To save souls, even though entire nations may be annihilated. Now, this beautiful lady pulled no punches. She gave her ultimatum to mankind, prayer and penance, daily rosary, doing one's daily duty, repent and return to God, or else the chastisements will come from a God too much offended. The war will soon end, she said, but a worse war will soon follow. Error will spread from Russia throughout the whole world. Russia will promote wars and persecutions against the church. The good will be martyred, the Pope will have much to suffer, and several entire nations will be annihilated. And then she spoke secret words. And Lucy later wrote them down, sealed the writing in an envelope, marked to be opened in 1960 or on her death, whichever happened first. In 1960, Pope John opened the envelope and read the words. But though the world was waiting to hear the words, Pope John didn't publish them. They still remain secret. They're filed in the Vatican archives. Well, after the secret words, Our Lady went on. The outlook is, therefore, gloomy. But there is a ray of hope. In the end, my Immaculate Heart will finally triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me, Russia will be converted, and a period of peace will be given to the world. Then she said something odd, or at least it used to sound odd, but lately it makes sense. She said, in Portugal, the dogma of the faith will be always kept. Why Portugal? Why single out Portugal for keeping the dogma of the faith? It didn't make sense until recent years. But now we see it happening on a mounting scale. The dogma of the faith is getting a rough time in many countries. The eternal truths of the church are compromised and emptied of real meaning. Well, let's take comfort in the knowledge that the Pope and the Magisterium are not in on this holiday from dogma. The Pope and the Magisterium are sticking to firm and sound dogma and doctrine and teaching. But the Pope seems powerless to stop some of the damage that is being done by others. In May and in June and in July, the children were being followed by greater crowds. There were about 18,000 people at the Cova for the August apparition. But the children didn't arrive. They'd been kidnapped by the atheistic civil administrator who locked them up for 3 days, trying to get the secret out of them. Eventually, he threatened them with cauldrons of boiling oil, but they refused him, so he gave up and set them free. But they'd missed their appointment with Our Lady. However, she came to them a few days later in another place. Well, then September came, and 30,000 people accompanied the children for their September meeting with Our Lady. October came, and crowds beyond belief. Unending throngs of people streamed towards the Cova area. Through driving rain and bitter cold, they turned the Cova into a sea of mud. This was the evening of October the 12th, and the children had announced that the lady had promised to perform a great miracle next day, on October the 13th at noon. So the people came from everywhere, the devout to believe, and the skeptics and the atheists to laugh. Well, at dawn on October the 13th, the enormous crowd was waiting, soaked and shivering, and still more people could be seen, endlessly thronging towards the sacred field. The miracle was promised for 12 o'clock, and by 12, there were 70,000 or even 100,000 people waiting for it. 12 o'clock came and went, and nothing happened except more rain. The crowd began to get dangerous. It was all a hoax, after all. But the three children were calm. They waited in full trust in their lady. Nobody had realized that there are two noons. There is noon by locals, a Portuguese time, and there is high noon, the sun's noon. Our Lady was coming not for Portugal, but for the world. Her miracle would not be for local wonderment, but that the world might believe her message to the world. After about 2 hours of mounting tension, Lucy raised her hands and cried, "She is coming." And then, for Lucy, the impatient crowd is forgotten. She's in ecstasy. This is the day when she can ask the big question. She asks, "Madam, who are you, and what do you want of me?" And the vision answered, "I am Our Lady of the Rosary. I want a chapel built here in my honor. Continue to say the rosary every day. Men must amend their lives and ask pardon for their sins. Men must not offend God anymore, for he is already very much offended." Then Our Lady opened her hands, which threw beams of light towards the sky, and Lucy cried out, "Look, look at the sun." As the crowd looked up, the great mass of cloud parted like a curtain, and there was the sun, shining in a blue sky, but such a strange sun, like a great gleaming disc without dazzling, and one could look straight at this sun. Then the sun began to spin. It whirled and it danced in the sky. It became a spinning color wheel and a projector of colored light, which bathed the earth in blue, changing to yellow, then to green and red and violet. The people looked around them and they saw other people picked out in different colors. The spectacle of the ages went on minute after minute for about 12 minutes, the sun spinning and dancing and throwing out fantasies of color. Then the beauty became a terror. The sun hurtled down towards the earth. Zigzagging from side to side, it plunged towards the people. In their panic, they truly believed that this was the end of them all, and even the end of the world. Some stood petrified, and some fell to their knees in the mud, calling out their contrition, calling for mercy. At the critical moment, the sun stopped falling, and it climbed back, zigzagged back, up to its place in the sky, and became the ordinary, brilliant, blinding sun. The miracle of the ages was over. But as the crowd came to its senses, they found that a little miracle had been added with the touch of a loving mother. They found that their wet, muddy clothes were suddenly dry and comfortable and clean. Now, who but a mother would think of a little touch like that? Now comes the question. Did the real sun, the center of our solar system, dance at Fatima? And the answer is no. If the real sun had behaved like that, it would have wrecked the solar system. But something danced. That high noon at Fatima, the natural law was suspended, and an apparent sun did amazing things within a localized area. The celestial prodigy was seen by people within a radius of 20 miles of the cova. Over that area, it was seen by skeptics, by atheists, by people who were so disinterested they hadn't even bothered to go to the cova. Everyone within 20 miles of the place saw the miracle in all its spectacle. Now here is an actual photo of the cova area at Fatima at local time on October the 13th, 1917. In rain and with a cold northeast wind blowing, the crowd is sheltering under thousands of umbrellas, waiting for something to happen. And somewhere in this crowd were the editors of two big Lisbon newspapers, O Secolo and O Dayar. Both editors were unbelievers, and their newspapers were quasi-atheistic. For weeks in their papers, they'd been attacking the children and the silly people who believed them. These editors were among this crowd, not through pious motives, but to be on the spot when the promised miracle was shown up as a hoax. Then their papers would expose the children's fraud. But the editors saw the miracle of the sun and they changed. Next day, the newspaper O Secolo and the newspaper O Dayar carried news stories which were humble tributes to the wonders that they'd witnessed but could not explain. There was no more mockery on their pages. Instead, they reported marvelous events which, as Osekiro put it, carried us back to biblical times. In the words of Osekiro, all of a sudden a tremendous shout burst forth, "Miracle! Miracle!" The people, white with terror, gazed at the sun, which trembled and made brusque, unheard of movements beyond all cosmic laws. Remember, this is an atheistic newspaper reporting. Beyond all cosmic laws. The sun seemed literally to dance in the sky. End of quote. That was Osekiro. The other atheistic newspaper was just as excited. O. Dyer reported, and I quote, "Then the silvery sun, still shrouded in that grayish light, began to rotate and to wander within the circle of the receded clouds. The people cried out with one voice. Thousands, whom faith seemed to transport, fell to their knees upon the muddy ground." Remember, again, this is an atheistic newspaper. "Then, as if it were shining through the stained glass windows of a great cathedral, the light became a rare blue. Slowly the blue faded away, and now the light seemed to be filtered through yellow. All the people were weeping and praying bareheaded, weighted down by the greatness of the miracle." End of quote from the newspaper Odayat. The miracle of Fatima stands unique. It's the only miracle in recorded history that happened at a predicted place and at a predicted time on a specified day to prove the truth of something. The miracle of the sun was God's signature. By it, God was underwriting everything Our Lady said and that the children reported. And these are the people who were privileged to witness God's signature. And yet, the real purport of Fatima bore less on these people who witnessed the start than bears on us who live nearer the climax. Fatima is heaven's direct answer to the modern crisis of evil. Fatima is the key. And who can hope to understand the crisis without the key? In a talk like this, we can only give you a small portion of a big subject. You need to read about the subject yourself, and a good book is More About Fatima. We live in a momentous age. In a rising ocean of unbelief, we stand on shrinking islands of faith. Eternal truths are tampered with. The sense of the supernatural is fading. Jesus Christ himself is being cut down to the size of a mere man. His miracles are explained away. All miracles are denied. God himself, whatever he is, can't do much, they say, because whatever he is, he's just a part of the upward sweep of evolution. So faith declines and apostasy grows. And when you wander in the wasteland of faith gone dead, logic and theology won't get you back. But the light of a miracle can do it. Miracles are the shock treatment that can jolt unbelief into impregnable belief. And believe me, I know. And that, I'm sure, is the purpose of miracles. When God suspends the laws of nature, I'm sure his purpose is shock treatment to jolt us back to faith. So, the sick are cured at Lourdes, just as Christ cured the sick, and the blind see and the lame walk, so that we may be jolted back to faith when faith falters in a godless world. From the Church's treasury of miracles, we've looked at a few that have a special meaning for this age of unbelief, that lift the veil that hides the supernatural from a world drugged by materialism. In the presence of the host turned to flesh, and of the Sacred Heart, and of wine turned to blood that redeemed us, we can disdain all the fashionable talk about ritual meals and symbols, because we have seen the reality of the real presence and the supernatural sacrifice of the Mass, the same sacrifice as the cross. Next to the real presence, we have the treasure of the face of the shroud, and Jesus is no longer an elusive stranger, but a person, a real person of noble countenance, still noble in death. The miraculous painting of Mary is a gift that converted the Aztec nation, but its mission is for today's world also. Today, her old enemy, the serpent Satan, is loose and triumphant in a world that's spiritually dead. And the same serpent knows that in his hour of greatest triumph, the same heel will crush his head. I am positive that God gave us this beautiful painting of Mary and also the stark photo of Jesus in death to help us through this devil's age of unbelief. Just as I'm positive that he sent the Queen of Prophets to Fatima to deliver a warning and an ultimatum unparalleled by the prophets of old to a world that has gone too far. As a good priest said to me recently, if these are miracles, we have a duty to make them known. And tonight, we have tried to make them known. Thank you.